Obviously, some of this is classified, and obviously, we're not going to get into that because we don't know that.
Right.
But what kind of data are they collecting data and using it against the American people in a national security sort of way?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to tell. I mean, you know, obviously that connection to China is shrouded. You know, their openness and transparency
sure.
perspective is vastly different than ours.
Yeah.
But, you know, I will say that, you know, from our perspective, you know, the opportunity for the platform itself to eliminate that component allows it to function like any other social media platform. There is a tremendous amount of Americans' data that's out there. The question is whether or not those that have it are folks who might ultimately or would likely be considered to be someone who might utilize it in a negative way. And it's not just about, you know, upscaling or downscaling information. You know, the Wall Street Journal did a thing where they signed up as a 13-year-old girl, and within just a few minutes, you know, they wound up getting photos of self-harm and other things.
Americans are capable of achieving extraordinary things when they have the freedom and opportunity to do so. This is American Potential, and here's your host, Jeff Crank.
Well, thanks for joining us for another episode of American Potential. Very interesting topic, legislative topic, that we're talking about. TikTok. That's right. Who would know I knew anything about TikTok? I really kind of don't, to be honest with you. But we do have somebody here who knows. He's the TikTok king. Well, actually, probably not the TikTok king, but he knows about a lot about what's going through the Congress right now. Back in March of this year, the House passed the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act, or better known as the TikTok ban. Now, TikTok has become one of the biggest social media platforms in America, and some may say it's just funny cat videos and makeup tutorials, but it has also become a big source of where Americans get their news. Now, to show how much influence this platform has on Americans, when this bill was being discussed in the House, TikTok did a call-in campaign by having a message in the app for users to click on to connect them to their representative's office. Now, some representatives said they received thousands of calls asking for them not to vote for this bill. So how did we get to this point? The Congress is looking at having a social media platform be taken off the App Store. Well, TikTok's parent company is located in China, which has a different approach when it comes to how businesses are able to operate in that country. So why is this such a big deal? I want to welcome Brent Gardner, who is the Chief Government Affairs Officer for Americans for Prosperity, to talk about the bill. Brent, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. So this is, I mean, this kind of seemed like it came up pretty quickly in Congress, right? It just, there's always been this discussion about what's going on with TikTok and all of that. But explain to folks how this isn't a free speech bill.
Yeah.
This is a national security bill.
Yeah, right? No, I mean, you're right. And the truth is, the questions about TikTok have been out there for a long time. There's been a ton of openly reported questioning of their methods, the relationship with the Chinese Communist Party. But, you know, I think increasingly people have recognized, and there's been kind of a catalyst since the attacks in Israel late last year, just to see the way in which the platform itself is interacting around information. And what that is, as far as a distortive thing that, you know, in the hands of a strategic adversary of the United States could really be problematic. So people have been working on this issue for a long time, but I'd say that it's definitely picked up. And, you know, the legislation as introduced and passed out of the House, you know, just last month, you know, I think showed a roadmap to the way that people were thinking about how to deal with this, which was, as you pointed out, to give an opportunity, because this really isn't a ban. It's it's an opportunity to divest of that problematic relationship with a foreign adversary, but then the platform could go on. So that's kind of the way we're looking at it.
Yeah. So Americans for Prosperity, obviously one of our great pillars that we stand for is the one that stands in our Constitution, which is the First Amendment, right? And we're for free speech. In fact, we even believe that the government the government shouldn't tell a platform what they should or should not have on their platform. And we
That's
talk
right.
about that with Facebook and some of these others. So there are some people maybe even on the right who say, well, Facebook is bad and we should ban them or we should, you know, st- step in and tell them that they can't ban other people. But we believe that that is a platform that they own. It's a private company.
That's right.
And the government shouldn't step in and tell them they should do this or do that, right?
Yeah, that's right. And that's why when we looked at this legislation, we required it to be narrowly tailored, to be focused on the challenge, the unique attributes that are specific to TikTok and this relationship with the Chinese Communist Party. But, you know, broader questions of reforms or broader questions of changes that would impact traditional social media companies that don't have this association, that type of inclusion in this legislation would have meant that we would have opposed the bill. So the fact is, this issue is not about the First Amendment. This is truly a national security issue, and that makes it meaningfully different from our engagement perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. I look at it this way. What would the reaction of the American people be? Like, for instance, Facebook already exists. It's a privately held company. But what would the reaction be of the American people if Iran came in and bought Facebook, right? And it was a state-owned Iranian, you know, asset in the United States. I mean, isn't that really kind of what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, it hasn't even gone that far. I mean, you know, we've seen what happens when Saudi Arabia tried to get involved in golf. People got really excited. You know, when you talk about, you know, the fastest growing news site for people of certain age demographics in this country, you're looking at it on parity in a more significant way than traditional news media sources.
Yeah.
So the impact of that on our populace, given the challenges that we're facing both nationally and internationally, and some of the goals of a foreign adversary, that stew is particularly of concern.
Yeah. Is there, as we look at the way maybe TikTok is used by, I mean, do we see evidence of the Chinese government sort of driving division? And I mean, I think we saw that in the elections too, where our adversaries, whether it was, you know, Russia or China or others, were kind of sowing discontent and division on social media to divide Americans. Now, some of that's a free speech issue, but do they go further than that?
Yeah, there's a lot of open source information out there on this today, including stuff from the Wall Street Journal that they've published, you know, showing instances where, you know, there are certain issues and topics on Facebook that when you compare to to Instagram, which is basically 2.5 times the size, you know, you'd expect to see twice the amount of posts, 2.5, maybe 4 times as many. But in some instances, it's 10 or 24 times, especially around things like Tiananmen Square, around challenges around COVID, around different subjects that are certainly in the interests of the Communist Party in China. And then you'll see other issues, you know, that are very specific to Chinese interests that are significantly boosted. So you'll see Tiananmen Square having very, very exponentially low numbers, and then other interests be extremely, you know, pumped up. And look, what we've seen so far has been a demonstration of what that could be. But if we look at some of the challenges that we face going forward with China and other challenges that we see internationally, whether it's Taiwan, whether it's, you know, shipping in the South China Sea, whether it's any potential international conflicts like the ones that we've seen in Israel and Palestine and elsewhere, the ability to sow discontent and to be able to drive, you know, meaningfully different mindsets in the American people is a real concern. It's a challenge, and we've already seen kind of the seeds of the dry runs of what that could look like. And that's why Congress is looking to take action, and why we've decided that it's important to engage this bill from that national security perspective.
You came up, by the way, I think it's fascinating. Like, you would never get a bill through Congress to ban, like probably to ban a platform, because just a difficult thing to do. It runs counter to our view of openness, of an open society.
That's right.
But to me, this is actually a pretty brilliant way to do it. Like, we're not banning the platform itself, we're simply saying it needs to divest. Talk about what the bill actually does.
Yeah. So what this does is it would say that TikTok has an ability to divest of its PRC investment, of its direct connection to a qualified buyer approved by the government that isn't going to ultimately pose that risk, or ultimately they will lose the ability for it to be downloaded, shared, updated on the app stores. And so basically, it's creating the incentive for them to go ahead and remove the challenging portion of the relationship. And then after that, you know, there is a consequence to it if they don't, that we ultimately have to address, you know, the impact of the platform. And so it's a triggering mechanism based on eliminating the one component of the platform that's problematic, which is that relationship that they have with the PRC. And if they do that, then the platform would continue to go on. Owners that don't have that.
Is there a concern, and I guess I'm kind of looking down the road, but is there a concern that even if that were to happen and they sold TikTok and there wasn't that relationship, that China would still try and use that platform in some way? Or what's the thought?
Yeah, I mean, the future is unknown and unknowable, but I think the goal here is to really send a strong message. And I think putting it under a microscope, what we've seen, and for members of Congress who've seen the publicly accessible data on this and also receive classified briefings, sent by the White House to be able to brief Congress, you know, they come out of it. We don't usually see the Energy and Commerce Committee come out with a 50-0 vote, especially not in this era of politics and in an election year. And then to see such a strong bipartisan vote come out of the House on this bill, I think it shows that those folks who've taken the time to go through the information and see it, they recognize how important this is. So I think this is an important measure. I think as written, it should accomplish what's necessary to get us to a position where TikTok continue to grow as a business and content producers and everyone else can utilize the platform, but we eliminate the danger to the American people.
What are they, I mean, obviously some of this is classified and obviously we're not going to get into that because we don't know that.
Right.
But what kind of data are they collecting data and using it against the American people in a national security sort of way?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to tell. I mean, you know, obviously that connection to China is shrouded. You know, their openness and transparency perspective is vastly different than ours. But, you know, I will say that, you know, from our perspective, you know, the opportunity for the platform itself to eliminate that component allows it to function like any other social media platform. There is a tremendous amount of Americans' data that's out there. The question is whether or not those that have it are folks who might ultimately or would likely be considered to be someone who might utilize it in a negative way. And it's not just about, you know, upscaling or downscaling information. You know, the Wall Street Journal did a thing where they signed up as a 13-year-old girl. And within just a few minutes, you know, they wound up getting photos of self-harm and other things. In China, TikTok is largely posting about engineering videos and science and things that encourage, you know, you talk about funny cats and dance videos. That's the American version of TikTok. Ultimately, that would not be great, but the challenge is the ability for them underneath their national security laws to gain access to that information, to influence the platform. As a company attached to them, they're required under Chinese law to be able to provide that information if asked for by the Chinese government, basically creating a permanent backdoor for a potential strategic adversary. So it's meaningfully different than, let's say, Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, who possesses that in the U.S., who ultimately doesn't have a national security interest working against the United States.
So you're saying, what you're saying is, you know, a 13-year-old girl in the United States would get very different content thrown at them
than the Chinese version.
Than a 13-year-old
Absolutely.
Chinese girl.
That's correct. Yeah. Very different.
Yeah. Interesting. And obviously, the Chinese government probably views this as a weapon that they are exploiting against the United States.
Well, we've certainly seen the downstream impacts of what some of the platform's, you know, outputs have created. They seem to line up pretty closely there. It is potentially challenging. What we've seen already is something that you know, when you talk about it with members of Congress and you talk to folks who've heard not only the open source stuff that we know about, but the classified stuff as well. You know, the concern ratchets up to a level they say it's time to take action. Mm-hmm. And we agree.
Yeah. How would this bill impact other social media platforms in any way?
It shouldn't. So the way that it has been narrowly tailored requires it to be able to have that foreign ownership. It requires it to be able to have it from an adversary. The way it's been structured really limits it to TikTok because that's where the challenge is. Otherwise, we wouldn't have supported it. You know, from our perspective, we don't want to see expansive efforts that could go after things that could spiral out and include things in the future like other existing platforms where it may impact free speech. From our perspective, it had to be limited to really just TikTok where this problem lives today.
Yeah. Where did this idea come from? Like, who came up with this approach?
So I think it's a group of folks. Yeah. We worked closely at the end as they were putting it together with the China Select Committee and Congressman Gallagher's team. But there's been a number of folks, everyone from Kat Kamek to you've seen folks in the Senate who've taken leadership roles on this kind of over time. But I would say the China Select Committee has been the one who's really taken the lead on this under Mike Gallagher's leadership.
Yeah. Okay. So where are we now? So it sounds like it's passed. It's coming to a vote in the House.
So it's already been voted on. It came out of Energy and Commerce 50-0. I mean, you can't get stronger than that.
This doesn't happen.
Yeah, it does not happen. So it's passed the House once. In order to find a vehicle to move it and to be able to have it go in the Senate, it's being looked at for a vote this week, potentially in part of the larger package that includes some foreign aid components and some other pieces of legislation. So it could quickly move to the Senate as early as next week. And we could see it, you know, the president's already announced that were to make it to his desk, he would sign it.
Yeah.
So we could be looking at
it. And we assume in the Senate, it'll be a pretty bipartisan effort there as well.
I do. Yeah. So it's been a conversation for a long time. We've seen strong indications from members of both parties, including leadership of the relevant committees that are interested in getting this and getting it done right. And I think right now we're kind of zeroing in on the right vehicle that should ultimately allow it to pass.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk while I have you. And we talked about this TikTok bill. Let's talk generally a little bit about Congress, if you don't mind.
Sure.
It seems a bit dysfunctional these days. Let's talk about the dysfunctionality of Congress and what are your thoughts on sort of getting through that or getting over that? How do we get to a better place in Congress?
It's been tough to watch. I mean, it's been difficult. You know, there's a lot of really great folks that I think are trying to do good work. But look, in an era of close majorities, there are some real divisions in the way of thinking about how we should be able to move forward. Mike Johnson's one of the most conservative speakers we've ever had, but with extremely tight majorities and the rules package as it is, it makes it challenging for them to be able to organize, you know, a direct path to move on legislation. Congress has failed to be able to constrain spending in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. You know, we continue to repeat the mistakes of the past, and Democrats have remained largely together when it comes to pursuing their goals. So, you know, I think the challenge of the electoral environment adds and heightens some of the excitement and some of the challenge around trying to get people together to work on stuff. But, you know, I do think that we're probably headed towards even more of that as we get closer to November. And, you know, they've got just very few things left to try and accomplish before the election. But the American people are watching and they're shopping for America's tomorrow. So they've really got to get it right.
Yeah. It seems, too, that this Congress, I mean, there are very few pieces of legislation that have been sent to President Biden to sign.
That's right.
Right? Very few. I guess we still refer to it as regular order, but returning back to where there's voting on appropriations bills and things like that, that just seems like a distant memory to people.
It's an eye roll conversation in Washington to talk about things like regular order or budget process reform. Yeah. But the truth is, these are things that are intended to be a big part of what we do to be able to have good governance, to be able to constrain spending, to be able to make sure that the policies we're moving are effective, to not turn over the power of Congress to unelected bureaucrats. And time after time, we've continued to see bills passed that do those things that have gotten us in the trouble we're in to begin with. So I do think there's a goal and a desire to try and get there. But I think the path is just really challenging in this environment.
Yeah. Better to get more policy champions there, right? I mean, you talked about such a razor-thin majority. What is the majority in the House? Is it one vote right now?
I think it's two.
Two votes.
Yeah, two votes. They can afford to lose two. But I mean,
and that's ultimately the concern in the House, right? If you're on that razor-thin, everybody has to agree every single time to get something through, and everybody has to be a team player, and there can be no dissent, or you don't have a majority.
That's right. Or, you know, as we've seen in some of these recent ones and might see again here now, Democrats in this highly partisan environment will have to come in to ultimately help these things pass. And in an electoral environment, that becomes particularly challenging. You know, we want to see strong bipartisanship. I would love to see both parties agree on good policy, but the electoral environment as the backdrop has made that particularly challenging for leadership when the threshold for being able to do a motion to vacate to remove the speaker, as we saw with Kevin McCarthy, is just one member. And then, you know, they can ultimately try and replace him.
So. Yeah. How do we use then an issue like this TikTok bill, right? Which clearly is a bipartisan issue. When it first went through the House, what do you remember what the vote was? Was it 400 something?
It was 370 something, if I remember correctly.
370.
I think so. It was really high.
So very few votes.
Very few votes.
How do you use something like that, that clearly is a bill of importance, right?
Yeah.
How do you use something like that to to maybe show a way forward on some other issues where we can come to consensus?
Yeah, that's a great question. Hey, listen, we didn't get to the mess that we're in right now in any one congressional term. Rome wasn't burned in a day, so to speak.
Right.
So, you know, part of it's about building up muscle memory. So having an opportunity for folks to be able to see what coming together on good legislation does builds that muscle memory. It's a first step. Those muscles are very weak right now, Jeff. So if we continue to see opportunities to do that, it breaks down some of the dams that exist between members to have the productive conversations necessary to figure out how to be able to move more legislation in the interests of the American people by working together.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a great example. I'd love for it to be the start of a movement. But I think from where we are today, it's just an inflection point that just needs to be doubled down on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Last thing I want to say, within AFP, government affairs is a department, I guess, of AFP,
yes,
division or department. So people understand, you guys have been such a great partner with the podcast, and I hope people understand like how much you have been. I think when we started this podcast just over a year ago, I guess 15 months ago, you know, we started with nothing and we started to build it, and you guys quickly saw like the value of this to kind of highlight policy champions. And it's a win-win, I think, for members of Congress who can come on, or governors or whoever else, to come on and kind of highlight the things that they do. And I'm thinking, I don't know if you saw the episode with Governor Gianforte,
yes,
of Montana. I think for America to see the great things that he has done in Montana, I mean, it was kind of almost shocking to me. And I pay attention. Those are really valuable opportunities for them, and I think for Americans for Prosperity to do it. So I wanted to thank you for being such a great partner on that. But any thoughts on that partnership and how we continue to grow it?
Yeah, you're right. We knew this was going to be big. We knew exactly how big it was going to be. One of the major mandates that we have is to try and elevate the voices of people doing great work. You know, Congress is at all-time approval level lows. Right. And, you know, the reason for that is probably justified. You know, Congress has got a lot of things they're not doing well at. But there are those examples of folks out there who are doing the right thing, who are doing it well, who are making an impact. We need to elevate those folks. Their names should be known. They need to have a chance to tell their stories, hear how they're partnering with AFP, and help give people a vision for what an elected official can be, not just as a politician, but as a statesman. Those are the folks that I think are going to lead us from where we are to where we need to be.
Yeah. And it's been great. I mean, it's been awesome seeing policy champions, even to the point where some have, I mean, you had a U.S. Senator, I think, who asked you, hey, when am I coming on the podcast?
Yes.
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
Remember that happening. And that was just, you know, 8 months or 9 months into the podcast. So, So that's awesome. But we really do appreciate the partnership. You have been great. It's great to highlight it. I've always said, you know, members of Congress, people, it's easy to think that, you know, they're all crooks or they're all whatever, because those are the stories you hear, right? It's highlighted when someone does something wrong or unethical. That's the story everyone hears, is that one member of Congress, you know, the George Santos story.
Yeah.
But it was not. It's not a story when, you know, a member of Congress has been married for 33 years and, you know, faithful to their wife. I mean, it's just not a story. And
or,
so it's always negative that it gets the attention.
Or up until midnight last night, texting with their staff and with folks from AFP and from policy folks, you know, up early in the morning to be able to beat the first calls in chambers, you know, to do the work that it takes, flying back and forth, being away from their families, going out there and speaking truth to power themselves in the halls of Congress. It's laudable. There's people doing that great work, and it's hard to get that through the noise because it doesn't make a great soundbite. It doesn't get people angry, but those are the folks who are going to lead us from where we are to where we need to be. They're out there. They're doing the work. We're excited to work with them, and I want to thank you and the podcast for helping to highlight them, because it does make a difference. They know that we're out there highlighting it, and I think it really helps.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thanks for all the great work you're doing. On this, both on the TikTok bill and kind of coming in and educating us on that, and just the work in general to save liberty and freedom.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, Brent. Thank you. Appreciate that. Well, look, I mean, who would think of a bill like this that would basically force TikTok not to not be around, right? This isn't to get rid of or eliminate TikTok or a platform that people use, because this is America. We enjoy having all these wonderful platforms that people can interact with one another on, share their thoughts. But the question is, you know, should we allow an adversary like China to be able to manipulate and use it, you know, to the point that Brent said, you know, if you're a 13-year-old girl in the United States, you're getting a very different destructive message on the platform than you would get if you're a Chinese girl. So those are the kinds of things that are important to know. The government affairs team at Americans for Prosperity does such a great job interacting and building and fighting for liberty and for freedom and for limited government. And they just do a great job. And it's great to talk with Brent and highlight it. Thanks for joining us today on American Potential.
Thank you for listening to American Potential. You may listen to more stories from Americans working every day to expand freedom and opportunity in their communities by visiting AmericanPotential.com.